All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Tessitore, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic.
Which Snack time!
As always, interrupting
Snack
you,
time!
As always, is the one and only
of
Weens. The one and only here. Mike Linneman.
Here for the snack time. And I even got my dogs riled up in the background, which is super great.
Dude, I just got delivery from my number one snack joint in Quincy, Mass. It is Hakata Ramen. Ugh. So happy. So happy.
Nice. Quincy, Mass. That sounds nice. That sounds real nice. Ant, today we have yet another. We're talking flavor. We got a set coming out real quick here. Amonkhet is around the corner. Seems like we just had another set come out. We were talking about this a little bit pre-cast about simply analysis paralysis. It's almost hard to soak up flavor, or you miss things that come out because you simply don't have time to really look at preview cards all that quickly. I mean, it's whack-a-mole during preview season because it's so quick. I'm even noticing that in my art reviews, that it's really hard to soak up and really find the cream of the crop. It's more of, oh, here are interesting things that, you know, Reddit's going to post 6 months from now and then post again and again in 7 and 9 months too. But we found some pretty interesting things. I'm going to be keeping some stuff for my art review that are, you know, good and for different reasons. But per always, we have our Flavor Gems episode for the new set for Amonkhet. We always do it for new people that haven't heard us yet. We always choose the five different aspects of Vorthos, meaning the art and storyline things, the lore things, plus the art, because art is not lore technically. That doesn't quite make sense. And Ant wrote an article on this that he still needs to update, and it's kind of a joke. And why we're here is, you know, Gathering Magic takes care of us. We have a Patreon that we're working through. We will have some interesting stuff coming up right here at Grand Prix Las Vegas as well, including at Snack Time, where we're going to work on a live episode, which is great.
That's right. And so those of you who don't know, the five faces are the writer, the artist, the dreamer, the oracle, and what am I missing?
I'm just going to let you struggle.
Oh, man.
The gamer. It's always
gamer.
The one you end.
Yeah, that is always the one that I forget.
It's always the one you forget because you don't actually play much.
Yes, I do. I just don't play for reals. I don't play for keeps, you know, like you.
It's not. Well, okay. It's not like you play FNM every week.
Yeah,
right. Don't
you? Dude, you still play Ante and stuff. Oh, no, I don't. I never go to FNM. No, I just play Commander.
You're a Commander. I love Commander.
I love Commander. Oh, my God.
But
we
I don't.
We have Commander nights, like. I feel like for me and my friends, instead of having like a poker night, like my dad used to have poker night when he was younger, we have Commander night. Like, you know,
see, we cube. It's such a different experience. Like, I have two or three Commander decks, and I don't really work on them all that much because we cube. Like, there is nothing. Like, if someone has the option on a Saturday morning, they're like, "Hey, man, do you want to do a rotisserie cube, and we're going to have coffee and donuts, or do you want to, you know, draft in the afternoon?" And I'm like, well, and I'm an adult, so let's cube in the morning, and then we get the rest of the day to bike to a brewery or whatever. So it's super hard for us. Plus, it also allows you to get, like, 6 to, like, 12 people together.
Right.
And then people can, like, split off and play Commander or whatever after. But Commander, I mean, it's really hard when all of a sudden you have 5 people. You're like, wah, wah, or, like, 6. 6 is the worst. Like, what do you do? 2 pods, like, oh, come on.
Well, usually we'll do a variant, like we'll do something like assassins.
Yeah, sure. There's some weird dog things you can make work.
But ultimately what happens is somebody loses track of the guy going infinite.
Nice.
And then we all lose.
Yeah. Hurricane kill all 4 people at the same time, which is great. Let's just dive into this. Our episodes are always 30 minutes. Everybody knows this. We're going to start out with my favorite thing, the artist. It's really a part of the Vorthos thing that it makes it where we are with Magic. I mean, without art, we're just Uno. Like, it's just Magic is Uno. It's fancy Uno without the art. So the art really makes it what we need to see. And this week, this set, there's a variety of different stuff in there. But Ange and I took really different things. And I want you to start with this one because you got You have a weird choice here, and I want to hear why.
All right, so I picked Unwavering Initiate by Greg Opalinski. The reason that
Opalinski with a P.
Opalinski. Oh, sorry, my mistake. Dude, you know I butcher names. It's a curse. It's a curse.
Yeah, it's a thing.
But anyway, so I picked this card mostly because of the token. So this is a human warrior that has Embalm, right? So it has its own zombie token, where it's a zombified version, a mummified version, if you will, of the Unwavering Initiate. And what you can clearly see in the token that maybe isn't super clear in the regular art is the fact that this guy has a prosthetic arm.
Yeah.
He lost his arm at some point during the trials, and instead of giving up, he just slapped a blade onto his wrist and kept going. You know, and I feel like this really helps to further the overall story and the overall flavor of Amonkhet, where, you know, they have such fervor for making it through these trials that, you know, the idea of missing a limb, just, it's not enough to deter them. They're always determined to just keep going, keep pushing, keep striving for their goal. And I think that's really cool. And it's something that we don't see a lot of in Magic. And especially done this well. I love the piece. I love how, you know, this guy is in what is basically a coliseum, right? It's hinting at the fact that he's made it, like, pretty far in the trials, because the early trials are all kind of, like, interior to the monuments and stuff.
Sure. So, it's funny. I looked at that with the spike hand, and immediately I thought of Avatar of Woe. Which is funny because, like, he only has one arm and a spike, and Avatar of Woe has three arms, and one of them is a spike. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting thing. I wonder if someone looked into that art reference and be like, what if one's missing an arm? And someone like, well, make it a spike like Avatar of Woe. I mean, Randy posts, you know, seminal work from back in the day, whether it's the promo or the OG. The original one is just absurd. It's just silly.
Yeah.
Very evocative, has like a background person crying, like it's so good. I thought of that right away, and I'm like, oh, I see what you did there. Nice little playful on that, you know, for someone that gets like the next level down, the one up, if you will.
Right.
Dig it.
What do you got?
I went opposite direction. I'm an art collector. I'm an art fan, obviously. I own Magic art more than I'd like to admit. And often people harp against everything is digital these days. It's digital this, there's no traditional, whatever. Well, the problem is that medium does not matter to quality. And this one, for example, this artwork is Watchers of the Dead by Joseph Meehan. And it looks like a photograph. I mean, it straight up looks like a photograph at card size. I remember posting this to Twitter and people saw the JPEG and they're like, oh, I thought that was a photo. And I'm like, yeah, but the cat is looking at you. And people are like, yeah, that's kind of neat. But look closer. And when people did, they could notice that all of a sudden that the head moved over and they showed the rocks kind of coming loose from the head moving. And you can see tiny little bits of rock in there. And digitally, you can do that because you can zoom in, you know, a bajillion times. So it gives this mini Easter egg. You know, very Lord of the Rings with the Watchers outside the building, which is so cool. But it also shows that, you know, you can make a digital piece at card size. It looks great. And blown up, it still has amazing storytelling potential. And points out that, you know, even if this was a photograph, people were still pretty cool with it. They'd be like, oh, that's fine. And there has been photographs in the past of Magic. There have been collages that people put out and then took a picture of, and all of a sudden that was the card. Like Ring of Gix is a collage. It's like candles.
Right.
And it's like in this guy's room and he took a photo of it and sent it in and they're like, oh yeah, it looks cool.
There's another one in Invasion, I think, where it's like a blonde woman and it's like three of her or something. I forget the name of the card.
In Invasion?
Mm-hmm.
And no idea. The only other ones I could I have no idea. The only other thing I could think of is Coat of Arms, which is actually also a collage. Like it's It's like a full sculpture. And like the eyes light up, which is super funny, and like the feather is real. A friend of mine has it. But I don't know. I just kind of like that you don't think of that to say, like, oh, what if you did do a photograph? Could you turn that in? Would that be kosher? And I don't know. It's a fun thing to think about, of how you could take a photo, maybe if there was an Egyptian artist, and, you know, manipulated it digitally and turned it in. And could that work? Yeah. I mean, and I would argue, yeah, it could.
I am generally not a fan of hyper-realism far as, like, magic art goes. But I absolutely love this card art. Like, I don't know what it is about it where, like, I look at it and I can see how real it is. Like, I can see that hyper-realism that, like, I generally dislike. But for some, I don't know if it's the smoke, if it's the addition of the person in the foreground or what, or just the way that the lighting is in the piece, like, overall. But something about this just works for me. It's so immersive. Like, I feel this card alone makes me feel like Amenket is a real place that I can go visit somewhere. Like, it totally blew me away when I saw it the first time.
Or it could be plausible. And I mean, Guillermo del Toro talks about that all the time. He's like, listen, your monsters don't need to be perfect. They just need to be plausible. And this totally is. I'm like, okay, you could totally burn something in the thing coming up and this thing moves. Like, yeah, okay, you got me. I totally get it. And what helps is if you go through the doorway, you can see the lighting in the background. It's not like sunlight. It literally looks like something's, you know, burning in there. And because it's inside a brick building, the light isn't everywhere. So it was really well done for a really minor piece. But, you know, a 2-2 for 2, you're going to be playing that in draft all day. Why would you not do that?
Right.
Like, that's... It not only it gets rid of embalming creatures, but it's just a perfect curve card. Like, fantastic usage here of a card that you absolutely will see a lot of play, which is good to have great art to go with it. So not that, you know, maybe marginal art is on things you play in limited all the time, and that's mindful, which is nice. That's all I got for that one. Next up, Writer. Writer is, you know, not only the name of the card, which Ant does, not only the flavor text, which Ant does, but how they interplay with each other and any sort of weird nuance that you may have from that.
That's right. So I'm going to go first on this one. I have Blighted Bat for the flavor text. And the flavor text is, Amenket's dual suns don't allow for the darkness of night, so bats are most active under the gloom of frequent sandstorms. Right? So I picked this for a number of reasons. One, as a flavor text writer, I understand that, you know, we get common cards and we get uncommon cards that, like, you know, they're not the showstopper planeswalkers. They're not these amazing sorceries where everyone kind of clamors to get the name or whatever. Like, we also have to do writing for limited fodder, right? It's just the nature of the game. And so sometimes we get thrown these really weird mind puzzles of, like, what do you write about a zombie bat? Like, it's just it's a zombified bat, right?
Yep.
And I absolutely love the writer's approach on this card, because not only does it help with world building in, like, describing the fact that Amenket has two suns and therefore there really is no such thing as night. So the way that we think about bats and the way that people on Amenket experience bats are totally different, you know, so it helps to kind of establish that different feel, that different world of Amenket. But it also is on a zombie bat, so it's making you kind of think that, oh, well, if they're zombified bats, then that means there must be living bats somewhere, and those living bats have to have, you know, some type of sleep schedule or whatever. Like, the amount of world building that's wrapped into this single line of flavor text is, to me, such a great example of the power and the ability that flavor text has for this game. And, you know, it's not just about saying, you know, something stupid along the lines of, like, hey, there are bats on Amenket, and sometimes they fly around when they're dead. Like,
nice.
Yeah, it's like, it's silly. Like, there's so much you can do in such a small amount of space in just one line. And I feel like this is a great example of that.
Okay. I think it's nice. It's a zombie bat. I dig it. like I don't know. Like
it's a Neil Ham zombie bat, man.
I mean, Neil Ham is he's good. Everybody knows that. Phenomenal there. I just wonder what that thing is on the ground. Like, what? It shows
don't
that there's
don't worry about
I do worry about it. That means there's skeletons out there.
No, don't worry about it.
Well, I'm going to worry about it. Like it means that some things stay out in the elements. You know, like everything dies and comes back to life. Okay, I get that. But why is there something that's dead and still there? Like that makes my mind turn for narrative next set. Whoa. Things die and they actually stay dead. How do they stay dead? There you go. I also chose a black card for this ant. And it's funny that we both chose things that were outside the Hekma, outside this protective thing around the city where all the action is happening. And I chose Horror of the Broken Lands. 5-drop, 4/4. When you cycle a discard, it gets bigger, +2/+1, which is the Fallen Angel sort of situation. Instead of sacking, you got to manipulate somehow. And you can cycle it for a black, which is real good. Real good in black to get card draw and then a later 5-drop card. 4/4 that you can make huge late game, good early, good late, fantastic thing. But really, the name is the odd thing that I'm trying to figure out. This idea of horror, comma, thing doesn't really happen too often in Magic. I mean, we've had Horror of the Dim, which makes me laugh. It means demure, clearly, but I'm like, it's dumb. It's like the dumb person's horror.
Just a collection of dimness.
Like just...
Dude, that's scary. That's scary in itself.
Like dumb people.
I'm the embodiment of idiocy. Like, whoa.
it's not good. Like, there's also what was it? Infectious Horror. You know, there's been other ones. Or even like your favorite Terror of the Fairgrounds, which could be horror, but can't make it a horror. Terror of the Fairgrounds. I always think at, but this Broken Lands that there were, that one Nicol Bolas did not make this plane. He came there,
right.
And that. There were other things here. There were other civilizations, other cultures.
The word broken alone signifies that not only that something used to exist, but that it was whole, right?
Correct.
You can't break something unless at one point it was not broken.
Correct. So
that's me getting real deep.
but that is, though. Like, what? How did this horror get created? Because usually you think, you know, demons get summoned or... somehow made whole. Angels are embodiments of mana, i.e. there's male angels. Why aren't there women ones? And even a horror, like how did a horror get created? So it really brings this idea of like, okay, this thing represents lost culture or something.
Yeah, like
really, really
was,
makes you
was
think
he
that.
Born or he, she, it, I don't know, but was this horror born of the breaking of these lands and is thus a representation, a physical embodiment of that event? Or did this entity used to be the horror of the awesome lands?
You don't know. You have no idea. Like this could have been a big bad way back in the day, and maybe there was a lot of these. But like that idea when there's always this weird dog kind of creature type that you're like, why is this thing here? Like, that is the coolest thing you can find in sets. Like, in Innistrad, you'd find, like, non-werewolf, non-vampire things. And you'd be like, what? Why is that thing there?
Like the worm with the soul arms for tongues?
100%. Like, why? Why is that a thing? But that also fleshes out the world.
Right.
It gives you such huge opportunity for, you know, fanfic writers or the variety of members in the community that can really expound upon those things. And also really gives you feeding frenzies when if you ever return, that you can use that as a nugget and then blow that out big. So I think it's great. I like weird names like this that aren't like Fast Fine Dragon or Quick Fox. It's like we don't know what it is. So you're like, it's a horror and it's from that other area. How's that sound? Nailed it.
Right.
I dig it. Next up, Ant, we got the Oracle.
That's right. So the Oracle is the merging of Magic's fiction with the real world in some way, shape, or form. The easiest way to do that is through cosplay. And so that is why I picked Nissa, Steward of Elements. Nissa has undergone a character shift in Amonkhet where she is now... utilizing both green and blue magic. And so this is an excellent opportunity for someone who either A, cosplays Nissa currently, or
sure.
B, wants to get into the cosplay game. What they can do is they can not only work on their Nissa costume, but also update the staff and have like this cool blueing, you know, blue light glowy effect or whatever that
sure.
just tips you off that, hey, this character's developed and... you got to keep her moving, keep it updated.
I can dig that. And the art's great.
The art is amazing, and the video that he put out on Instagram is ridiculous.
Yeah, Howard's from another planet. It's Everybody ridiculous. Knows this. He's from another
painted
planet.
Painted it on aluminum. I didn't even, like...
I know. Yeah, you like, can. You can do that.
I didn't even know you could do that.
You can paint on anything, really, but yeah, it's impressive. It's at auction right now, and it's not going to be going down anytime soon.
I just
it's
think
gonna
it's
be
funny,
real
you know, you always see like, oh, oil on masonite or oil on canvas or whatever. And he's just like, yeah, you know, oil on aluminum. Don't worry about it.
Just like it's like he recycled cans himself, and he's just like, oh, Howard, you're so cool. You're just the coolest dude. I didn't go something easy. I didn't go the cosplay route. I really went the cartouches, and I couldn't choose one because they're, you know, arbitrary at this level. And moreover, not only do we see them, you know, we can see them connected, and they make one amulet you wear. You know, as you pass each trial, you get more cartouches. Neat. You get a whole thing of bling. You get all the merit badges. And I just like this idea because it opens up so many opportunities. It opens up a game day event where you could have necklaces that you give out. It opens up T-shirts from Wizards so they could have a pro tour with them. It opens up a PPTQ, an RPTQ, where if you pass that, top eight gets a shirt with like a cartouche on it. And if you get the pro tour, you get the one with like two cartouches. Like... That's just so ridiculously next level built-in flavor to like the competitive game.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything in Magic that's really made that jump to be like pros would then have a collectible thing that deals directly with the set, directly with the story. Like that's brand new. That's impossibility.
This is something that I think is fantastic narrative design and like world building. Just, and I agree with you, just simply the fact that, you know, over the years we've been having these pre-release, like Magic pre-releases, and we've constantly had these things where it's like, you know, choose your guild or, you know, choose your destiny for Theros, and like you go through these hoops that are designed to not only improve your pre-release experience, but also help immerse you into the world and into the story that you're supposed to experience through the cards, right?
Sure.
This is, to me, the first instance where that idea is totally married up, right? Like, the whole story of these initiates is just simply that they are fighting through the trials in order to gain these cartouches. And just like these initiates, when you go to even the pre-release, You're playing in what, a Swiss tournament? Like you're fighting through the trials to be number one, and it could be so simple. I mean, it can literally be, if you are a store owner, have your players like go through a Swiss tournament, and everyone who wins round one, give them the white cartouche. Like just give them the card. They're all like commons and uncommons, right? Anyway,
they're all commons.
They're all commons. So just give them the common. And then when they go through the next round and they win, give them the blue one. When they win the next one, give them the green one. And then at the end of the day, only one player gets the red one. And because they're common, you can do silly things like where you just like, I mean, hell, you could staple them to your shirt if you want to. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like,
or you could take a hole punch.
Yeah,
you could
make a hole punch, make a little necklace. Like there are so many easy things that you can do that are hyper immersive. And we'll totally get players excited, not only about the story, but about the pre-release and about, what they're experiencing. And it's
I just
awesome.
Have never seen that.
I haven't
never
either,
seen
and
that.
I really, really, really hope that Wizards continues to put little narrative elements like this into their future sets.
Because it lends itself that this is really built at the LGS level. A game shop can just run with it. Where you're like, we want you to encourage to use these in any way, clever way you can. And we're going to give you a couple extra foils or something. Like, because they're worthless.
But that's the point. Like, I think that's the overall point. It's not so much the idea of, hey, include this narrative element into the set that you force upon players or that you force upon the game stores. It's simply that you just make them aware. Make the store owners aware of, hey, we integrated these little things into the set. We want you to be creative, and we want you to come up with your own take on how players should achieve these different cartouches, so that ultimately when different people are sharing their ideas on Reddit and they're like, oh, we have this idea. Oh, someone at our LGS, they just stapled the cards to their shirt. Oh, well, at our LGS, like, they cut they cut out the art and they made, you know, cartouches for everybody and, like, whatever. Sure. And it becomes like this, like, social competition almost that creates way more of a buzz than if everyone was just forced
100%.
To, you're like, oh, I have to pick the red cartouche box or whatever.
Right. Or, like, you come to game day and there's five rounds and there's a promo card for each round. Like, yes, I get it. That's cool. That's very neat.
But let it breathe. Like, let each
correct.
Let each LGS be true to themselves. And what you'll end up getting are a bunch of different creative takes, a bunch of different ideas that ultimately will just make the community seem more of a community. Right.
And I think that could have happened in more places. Like, whenever there's faction-based things, you know, Phyrexians, you could have had some sort of, I don't know, tattoos or something like that they have, or religious symbols in Innistrad. Like, that option is just right there. It's just going to take one more push from someone in organized play to be like, what if we just encourage it? Should that be enough? And, like, yes. Because then
that
people
is,
will
it's
post
all
naturally. Yep, because then they'll post to Instagram.
Right.
And that's the goal, is to get free advertising out of it, which, you know, is great, which we want. We want more people to see this.
Right.
So that's mine for the Oracle. I think it's phenomenal.
Your Oracle smoked my Oracle.
Yeah, I crushed yours, yeah. You're just like, I'm going to use this one, and I'm like, okay, son. next up we have is the Dreamer.
Yep.
And the Dreamer is really the storyline focused thing.
Right.
The lore things, which I'm reluctant to use, but it's fine. And really just things that showcase that, whether it's art, whether it's a name, whether it's flavor text, whether it's just a combo that the card does in the set, all fits. Ant, what did you pick?
So I picked Compulsory Rest.
Okay.
And I picked this mostly for the art and the narrative that the art is contributing to the setting and to the players as they're looking at it, right? And ultimately this is white removal, right? And what the art is signifying is an initiate being removed from the trials, right? They're being drugged out of the trial by these
different levels. Forcefully, yes.
Forcefully, and if you look closely, the initiate has a sword sticking through their body, right?
Yep.
And it's just furthering that idea, hammering home that narrative design of the set where every single initiate has this undying fervor, this undying desire to be number one. Like, it's such a interesting idea to put art like this on removal, because instead, you know, most removal is showing like, oh, a creature being obliterated or a creature being, you know, sent to the blind eternities or whatever, or like reduced
sure.
into dust or something. And you don't ever really see the creature fighting that. You don't ever see the creature looking like devastated by the idea that they're being removed, right? The player is obviously
right.
devastated because you're probably losing, right?
Yep.
But the creatures don't ever really seem like it's just like destroying them inside to be removed from the fight. And
sure.
Amonkhet is different because it, you know, it's a plane of basically Olympic athletes, right, that are all competing for the gold, and to be drug off the field because you know were running hurdles and you fell and broke your leg, like, that's devastating, you know? Like, that athlete would much rather crawl their way across the finish line just to say that they did it, you know?
Well, they'd rather die to do that or not even finish
right.
the race.
Or die, and that's the whole point, right? Like, this person is just saying, like, look, don't drag me off. I don't want a second chance. Like, let me fight this out to the death. And
right.
and I think that this piece of art beautifully captures that idea.
Ugh, creepy. That's super creepy. I did not go creepy. I went just simple. I went simple. I chose the card Open into Wonder. Really shows the Gatewatch arriving on Amonkhet. And it's just Jace opening the Hekma, the protective thing around the city. And that's really it. It's just them arriving there. giving a, you know, squad members unblockability, which is interesting that the Hecma means you can't be attacked or something. You know, like I'm trying to think of narrative terms, like what it does, but they come through, can't be blocked, and they get knowledge because of it, which is what they're doing. They're kind of doing recon, I guess.
I think the idea here, right, is twofold. So this, it's coming from Jace, right? Like, obviously, Jace is the one doing this action, right? He's opening the Hecma for everyone else. So that's kind of like the X target creatures can't be blocked this turn. That represents the storyline moment where Jace opens the way for every other member of the Gatewatch. So you as the player are opening the way for all of your creatures, right?
And then until
the end of turn, those creatures gain, whenever they deal combat damage, they draw a card, right? And that signifies the idea that now that the Gatewatch got through, they're all exploring Amonkhet in their own way and doing that recon, right?
Which they show in the story, the magic story today, which they explain, you're like, man, this place is weird, which they said like three times.
Right, but they're all doing their own version of that recon, right? So,
sure.
Like, for not being a storyline moment card, this, like, particular card has a boatload of story in it. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Like, I didn't expect to find a plain rule, but it was perfection. Like, this perfected world, this singular purpose, which uses Ant's Dreamer flavor gem, and then shows that the Gatewatch are like, huh, everybody really wants to only do one thing. That's weird. Wonder why that is. You know? And then it gets right in the scheme just by showing the one thing. I think it's nice. This could have been a story like card. You're absolutely right, with ease. Next up, last to go is the gamer. These are the people that want the flavorful interaction in deck building. This is, you know, I want to build the assassin deck, and I want the card assassinate in it, for an example. Or a goblin, and it has goblin grenade. Like, it just makes sense. It's flavorful. It's unified. Cards aren't always good. Like, mechanically, like, they're cool, but they're not always aligned to be spiky. And I'm going to go this first, probably because you're like, why did you pick that card? I chose Dread Wanderer, 1-drop, 2/1. It's a zombie jackal. Okay, so zombie deck, maybe 1-drop, 2/1. Enters the battlefield tap, because it's a zombie, remember? And zombies often have that. But it comes back into play if you pay 3, and if you have Heckbent, as people are calling it, when you have one or fewer cards in hand. But that's not even the reason either. I chose this because it opens up the Jackal-type decks. There is going to be an update to Jackals. We're going to see that everywhere. And this is one of those cards like Gravecrawler that, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but like 15 years from now, there's probably going to be a Jackal deck of some variety. And this thing, since it has the ability to come into play early and then come into play late in the game, probably will have some constructed playability things, and people will probably look for these. They probably aren't going to be a quarter or a dollar rare forever. Like, it may be worth something. And I just like that it's a pushed, flavorful, weird card. Normally, like a 1 for 2/1, just be a zombie. It wouldn't be a jackal. It wouldn't be an ostrich. It surely wouldn't be a filigriff. And I just like seeing that.
Oh my God, I would love to see like a one mana 2/1 ostrich.
Just no big deal.
Just a pissed off bird with its head.
Just an angry bird. And people are like, oh man, I really wish I could use this tribal. But like, no, that's not. It can be too strong that way. So I don't know. I just like kind of seeing where that could lead us in the future. And the card's good. This card probably will see some play in Standard because, again, 2/1 for 1 is quite good.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, yeah, it's a jackal, but it's also a super relevant type in that it's a zombie. So
correct, 100%.
You'll definitely see play in Zombie Tribal for sure.
Yeah, easy. But what do you got for us, Ant?
All right, so I did a Bone Picker. So this is a 3-colorless and a black 3/2 Flying Death Touch. But the mechanic that I found to be extremely, extremely flavorful, and the reason why I picked this card, is that Bone Picker costs 3 colorless less to cast if a creature died this turn. Playing up the idea that it's a vulture, right? And if there's something dead nearby, it's going to get drawn to it, it's going to start circling. And I love how elegant and how simple that mechanic is, and yet how perfectly it captures the idea of a vulture. And also the card is like stupid good. Like
really, the card is real
really,
good.
Really, really good. But
like you play this turn four, it's good.
Oh my
like
gosh.
Three yeah. power on a flyer in black with Death Touch? That's real good.
It's already good. Yeah.
There's a reason it's an uncommon, but
like I just you know, I'm a huge fan of flavorful mechanics and like mechanics that capture an idea in a very simple way. And just the idea of like, okay, something died, right? Vultures like it when things die, but when really? They die, they're more likely to show up. Well, what does that mean in like mechanic terms? Well, I don't know, just make it cheaper, then it's more likely to show up, right?
Boom.
And just that Boom. Simple idea is so perfect. For this creature that.
And you know, did you think about this? Like if you attack in, so say this is turn two, and you got a 1/1 dude, you swing over, you attack, it dies. Maybe it's that one drop goblin that dies, pings of damage, right? Turn two, legitimately, this stacks. So you could play two vultures on turn two.
Right.
Just by your dude running into a thing and it's dead and its carcass is still on the, you know, the battlefield. And you go boom, boom, vulture, vulture. And all of a sudden you have six power, turn two. Like, flying. That's amazing. And that six flying power, turn two, which is real good.
It's
like this
really crazy.
Could be in modern. Who knows what will happen with it.
I mean, about wanting to, like, if you want to slow a format down. Because who's going to swing in? Like, if you turn one, if you... You know, just put down like a 1/1 dork, right?
Yep.
In black, just 1/1 dork for one. And let's say like, you're playing red and they drop Raging Goblin. There's no way that they're attacking. Why would they attack?
Like, good point.
That makes no sense. So you're slowing the format down, right? And then you swing in with your dorky 1/1. There's no way that they're going to block. Because if they block, you're dropping two birds.
Yeah, or this you play Dread Wanderer. You play a 2/1 zombie jackal. Turn one, turn two. He's hitting for two. Like
right.
He's going.
Like it's such a weird card in that because it totally slows down the opponent, but it also speeds you up because it's putting.
I love
it's
it.
Putting
I think
you
it...
in a position where all of a sudden like all black creatures now have like fear. Like all of your creatures now have fear. Right, they're attacking, but it's not fear in that like. The creatures are afraid to block its fear in that the opponent is like, I really don't want to block. I'm really afraid, like legit afraid to block.
For your first three turns, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastically built card. And, you know, I think these foils are going to be real pretty. You can kind of see the gradient of light from the top left to the bottom right. I think that's going to just glow in foil. And if it turns out to be modern playable, you should probably hold on to a couple of these if you open them at pre-release.
Yep.
I 100% would, like, yeah, sure. So that's five phases of Orthos. Went through the flavor gems. And we got a couple minutes yet. We got some honorable mentions. I don't know why you picked yours. It's weird. And you got to explain to me why.
All right. So I picked Violent Impact. I picked this for the art because I just love how ambiguously weird it is. Like, I love the idea that on Amonkhet there was a chariot that got stomped on. Or crushed by something, and we just don't know why. We don't know what did it.
It could be anything.
It could be. Like, it could literally be anything. But all we know is that it's like real. It's either A, real big, or B, there's some really tiny chariots on Amonkhet. But we don't know.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny.
I just think it's hilarious. Like, it's whimsical. It's like why? Why did this happen? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it just pulls up your artifact. Yeah. It's fine.
This is whatever. Something stomped it. Something fell on it. like you play this card. It's like, oh, I destroy your soul ring. Well, like how did you just, I don't know, something fell on it.
Don't worry
Somebody
about it.
Somebody stepped on it. It's a thing.
if you notice it too, there's no creatures in it.
There's nothing. It's literally just like, imagine if you went to the mall. And you parked your car, and you went to the mall, and then you came back out, and your car was just, like, smushed. And,
sure.
And you didn't know why. There was no, like, huge meteor nearby, or, like, a big elephant stomping off in the background. Like, you just look at your car, like, why? Like, what happened? I don't understand.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah, it's awesome. Rainville did a great job. Funny, makes me laugh too. I have a different one, and this one I couldn't figure out how to fit it into our other categories. And Ant and I argued about this a lot to figure out what. Well, frankly, I yelled at Ant about it because Ant won't tell me anything. And it deals with the card Cast Out. And it's the strange thing because this is the first set that has tried to explain cycling. So follow me here. If you look at this card, it's a 4-drop flash, comes in, bang, anytime, and it's an Oblivion Ring. You know, it exiles a thing, which usually it's a creature, you know, help save your butt. Could be a Planeswalker, which is notable that white could exile Planeswalkers. Could that be story relevant? I don't know. But that's not the big deal. You can cast out something, you know, obviously they have the Heckmire on the city, so you can cast something out of the city and it goes with all the other horrors and zombies and probably going to die. Or you can say, I don't need to cast out somebody. We have the perfect society, which they already mentioned in flavor text before. It's stable. Crime is low. It's you don't have dissenters. And if you do, you put them in a sarcophagus, which is weird. So you can cycle away a removal spell, which why would you ever want to get rid of a removal spell in Magic? Well, in this setting, sometimes you don't need it. Sometimes you literally need to get a creature or an initiate instead than a removal spell because there's just no need for it. And that's just shocking to me that they finally figured out how to make cycling flavorful. Before, it was just, you know, 2-drop cycle a thing. Oh, it's just mechanical. I mean, even Aaron Forsythe said it on Twitter, it's just a full mechanical thing. Nope, not this time. This time it literally is. Every time you cycle something, you have to think, why would you discard this card? And how is it that this ever-present necromancy works? Well, there's spells going on, you know, at all times, but there's an enchantment or whatever those things are. And cycling is built into that. It helps you get through the trials. It helps individuals win. And cycling is the glue that finally makes sense for that. And I'm just blown away by it because I did not expect that at all.
I think you really hit part of it on the head in your description of, like, Amonkhet is a, you know, as you said in your earlier card, your earlier flavor gem, like, it's perfection, right? It's a somewhat perfect society. And
it's a stable society.
Exactly. That's a better word.
It's almost uniform.
Society. So, like, I mean, when everyone is following the rules, there is no need for removal. So that is an extremely flavorful way to justify putting cycling on a removal spell. But then at the same time, right, it also puts you – so that's true on the surface. But what I like to do is think from the standpoint of the player, right? Because you, as the player, are cycling removal, right? You are experiencing that feeling, right? And so what that kind of instills in you is the same mindset that all of the initiates need to have in order to make it through the trials, in that you have to be willing to give up everything if you really, truly want to come out on top. And sometimes that means getting rid of the one thing that you never thought you would get rid of.
Hard removal. And this is like the best removal. Yeah, like, it gets rid of any threat. And you could be like, no, this doesn't win me the game. This prevents me from losing. And that idea of someone wants to win versus not lose.
Exactly.
Is just like, what?
And that goes all the way back to mine as well. Like, the guy getting drug off. Like, the mummies are like, dude, we're keeping you alive. And he's like, screw that. I'm not going to win. I'm not going to be first loser. You know?
Right.
Don't keep me alive.
Yeah, I mean,
if you remove me, I'm guaranteed to not win. But if you leave me in, maybe, who knows, maybe I go on a rampage and I win.
That's high level elite athletic competition. Like, as soon as the thought creeps in of doubt, you've already lost because everything is so close. I mean, everybody at that elite level, I mean, it's one misstep. I mean, you could see, like, the purest form of it in, like, a distance race. You take one weird step,
you land on one hurdle a little wrong, you lose. It's just, you might make, no, you just lose. It's that easy. And you will do anything to do that, to get you 100% aligned in. So, I mean, that type of world building is just.
Knowing that, right? Every elite athlete knows that. And yet when they do hit that hurdle, what do? They run faster. Why?
They try to, at least.
Because there's a chance that everyone else hits a hurdle.
Can stumble. Can they? Can everyone else can stumble too? Correct. Which is weird that in the game that you're playing like the world building wants you to do. Right. It wants you to discard all of your threats to get the best threat.
Go for glory.
Yeah. Get rid of your two drops. Cycle your whatever cards. Cycle your horror because you want to get the biggest, best bomb creature in your pool. Like, sealed, like that's such a ridiculous sealed pool idea where you have all the random creatures and you gotta, your job is to get the best win out because that's the best chance of winning. Like, what? That should not happen in a top-down set. That should not happen at all. But that idea in the top-down is really what separates Amonkhet from Innistrad. Yeah. Innistrad was fantastic top-down. Everybody loved it, no doubt about it. But it didn't integrate play style
The narrative, into the setting. It's narrative design. That's something that Amonkhet capitalizes on more than any other set I've ever seen.
But it's that's the intention.
Right.
This is narrative execution that actually happens. Like, people are actually going to do that.
Right.
Which is, you know, the Fateful Hour, sure, there were ways to do that to keep your people alive. But it didn't feel like the humans were going to lose every time anyway. And then by a miraculous thing, a miracle, you can get out of it. Like, it didn't play like that in Limited. But now every Limited game you play, you are playing an Amonkhet. And that is beyond flavorful. So next level that I hope people can appreciate how much work it probably took to get that involved. Like, I'm shocked by that. So that's all we got for this week. Next week, we're going to bring on a guest, Ant. I think he's confirmed now. I think he's coming.
Yeah. He just accepted the invite.
We'll keep posted on that.
So you better show up, Sam.
Yeah. We're going to bring on known Vorthos associate, Magic Man Sam. We're going to bring him on, talk about it a little bit. But otherwise, want to thank Gathering Magic Parawis for putting us up. Want to thank Cool Stuff Inc. for always making deck building easy, especially Vintage Artist Constructed. Just plop it into the deck builder, which is so easy to build decks. You just plop it all in there and you pick which one you want, save some money about a little more slightly played one. I can't talk about it enough. It saves me hours of work. Want to thank them. Want to thank our Patreons keeping us going here.
I also want to thank Hakata Ramen for keeping me fed while I'm on
just
the road.
Ant loves ramen noodles.
This food is so good.
Okay. All right. I'm making kielbasa in a second. Ant, where can they find you real quick?
They can find me at Antestor on Twitter or at antestor.com. I'm usually yelling about weird stuff or revealing my secret identity.
It's true. For me, I'm at Vorthos Mike, and we're still working on the Magic Art Show, which is at Magic Art Show. We'll be revealing more stuff. God, we're so close. We're so close to getting that done. And then, well, Ant and I are going to be working real hard writing flavor text, writing names, writing labels and didactics to make it really the first and best art show that this community has ever done. And then, you know, I'm going to swamp Ant every few months a year to have him write things for me for future shows, which sounds great. So thanks for watching today. We're going to be starting a new little format soon, much to Ant's chagrin, but you'll see an announcement for that soon. Thanks for coming by today and watching.